Welcome to the Story Mine. My name is David Bullock, and I'm here with my co-host,
Kathy Barker.
We have such a great program today because, you know, I think we're far enough away from Thanksgiving that maybe we can whet your appetite just a little bit more. I'll never forget being a little boy and asking for an entire turkey drumstick, you know, the turkey leg. Well, I couldn't eat it all. Embarrassed that I couldn't eat it all, I made up some lame excuse and left the table with the turkey leg wrapped up in my napkin. I buried it in the snow outside. Little did I know, everybody watched from the living room window and knew my secret. Well, I think we're far enough away from Thanksgiving that we can still talk food without, you know, getting the belly rumbles and maybe even falling asleep on the couch.
Well, I have fond memories with my large family and my aunt's large family. Just the two of us alone would have over 25 people in one little three-bedroom house. But oh, the food that was laden on that table and the conversation. Being from big families, we never let people finish their conversation. We're always butting in. We're always cutting in on the conversation. But I have fond memories of those times and oh, the food. And Dave, I know that you have one of your favorite stories about food that I'd like you to share. It's about Esther.
Those that have heard my stories on Tales from the Wasatch Back might know Esther. I have fond memories of Esther, and particularly this story.
Well, let's hear it right now.
All right. I guess you could say that I consider myself an extremely blessed man. I had a childhood few children would have had the pleasure to have experienced. Since the age of 4, I was a mine camp boy. My daddy and grandpa were miners, and I wanted to be a miner too, just like them. Dad asked the camp cook, Esther, to take care of me while he worked in the mines, and what with Esther's long afternoon naps, I had an entire mountain to explore. Esther taught me as best she could to be safe, avoid rattlesnakes, mountain lions, bears, and coyotes. For heaven's sakes, Davy, don't get carried away by a coyote. From that short lesson, she told me to stay out of trouble and went in the cabin to take a snooze. It was fun exploring the foothills every day, hunting for lizards and horned toads, which always made me hungry and tired. Daddy always made sure that the miners and other help were well fed. He'd stop in at the fruit stand in the small community of Spring Lake, Utah, on the way to the mine and stock up on zucchini, squash, potatoes, celery, apples, corn, and whatever else they had in season. Eddie Sutton, a miner's helper, loved to hunt and made sure that there was always meat on the table. Why, I didn't even know it until I was in my later years that I was raised on elk and deer, sometimes mutton, sage hen, and rabbits, too, depending on how successful Eddie was with his rifle. In the fall, the frost would cover the hillsides in the mornings. The autumn leaves were ablaze, and it would almost be too cold for me to go outside and play. Horned toads, lizards, and nary a snake to rattle at me could be found, so I stayed in the cabin most of the day, sitting in front of the stove to stay warm. Towards the end of October, I woke up to a winter wonderland. It had snowed all night long, and the snow made the best snowmen. I'd such a good time making snowmen with my daddy and throwing snowballs at the chickens. I'll bet they didn't lay eggs for days after all the fun I had trying to hit them. I was only 4, so they were safe, just traumatized. Cold and tired, I went into the cabin. Esther set me up in the rocker by the big cook stove, removed my boots and gloves, and asked me to keep her company while she made supper. I've got a good mind to make a pie for supper. Yummy, I said, thinking of apple pie or my favorite cherry. She told me it was a special pie. We call it shepherd's pie, Davy. Esther went to the icebox and took out a small zucchini, a yellow squash, an onion, and several potatoes. She got a bucket of water from the water spigot outside and sliced up the potatoes, then put them on to boil. As I watched her cutting the vegetables, I became so lulled into the comfort of the warm radiating stove and the soft quilt she'd wrapped me up in, I fell asleep. It was one of the most comforting sleeps I'll ever remember. While I slept, Esther had cooked up a pound of elk burger with onions in a Dutch oven, then covered the meat and onions with sliced vegetables, a can of green beans, and a can of corn. Then, after mashing the unpeeled potatoes, she spread them over it all. As a last ingredient, she poured a can of Campbell's tomato soup on top. I love Campbell's tomato soup. I woke to the commotion of my dad and the other men stomping the snow off their boots, then coming through the door ready for supper. Esther brought the Dutch oven out of the wood-burning oven and removed the lid. It was the prettiest sight I'd ever seen, that wonderfully aromatic, bubbling, steamy shepherd's pie. She served each one of us a generous portion. Up until that moment in my short life, I had never tasted anything so satisfying. I asked for seconds, and then, when that was all gone, I asked for a little bit more. Everyone around the large table laughed, and Esther shined with pride. For a toothless woman, she had the biggest smile I had ever seen. The meal was delicious. The weather was bone-chilling cold outside, and we were so comfortable warm inside the mine shack. Our bellies were full, and the shack was filled with the pleasant scent of Esther's flavorful concoction. Dutch oven-cooked shepherd's pie has become one of my favorite comfort foods. 58 years later, as I write this story, it's winter, and bone-chilling cold outside. I'm comfortably warm here inside my house, which is full of the savory aroma of Esther's Dutch oven-cooked shepherd's pie. Oh, so good. I can still see Esther's happy grin, glad that a little 4-year-old boy could eat as much as those grown miners that were sitting around her table. I've got a grand smile on my face. Thanks, Esther. Hey, Kathy, when's the best time to tell a story?
Right now. I just love mashed potatoes and homemade gravy. Just thinking about potatoes reminds me of our next teller, George McEwen, who has a grand potato tale.
George, I would really like to hear the great lie that won you the Biggest Liar in Utah award.
I could certainly do that. Back in the 1970s, we grew up with 3 TV stations in Utah. There was no internet. There weren't even video games. So you had to find other ways to entertain yourself. And back in those days, it was pretty easy for kids to get access to stuff that went boom. And when my buddy, Jay, came over to my house with a 10-pound bag of California potatoes over his shoulder, we didn't need to say a word. We knew what we needed to do, and that was build a potato cannon. Now, as a condition of my parole, I can't tell you how they're built, but I can tell you that they take about 18 soup cans and about a half mile of duct tape. And the one we built was a thing of boyhood beauty. There had never been a cannon like this before, and there would never be one again. Well, we put a little bit of that stuff that goes boom in there, put a potato in, aimed it carefully, and lit the fuse, and boom. That potato flew 600 yards on the first shot. We thought this was amazing. So we upped the stuff that went boom, put another potato in, lit that fuse, boom, and it went a half mile. And each time we tried this, it went further and further. Finally, we aimed it really high, filled up the cannon about halfway with the fuel, and we lit it, boom, and that potato flew right over Mount Olympus. We were so excited. We were going to call our friends, tell them to come over and see this. When my buddy Jay said, "You know what? If we fill this all the way to the top and point it straight up, I bet you we can put a potato into orbit." This was an amazing thought. You have to remember, during the 70s, we were still at the end of the space race. And we knew that the Russians had put up a satellite first. We knew that they'd put the first man in space. But we were pretty sure they had never orbited a potato. So we put that cannon straight up in the air, packed it all the way to the top. Jay and I knew that this was a patriotic moment. So we said the Pledge of Allegiance and as much of the Scout Oath as we could remember. And we lit that fuse. and as it went down, Jay and I didn't notice that rain clouds had been moving in from the south. And as that fuse clicked down, they went right over the top of us. And shh, boom, that potato whistled up through those clouds. Oh, we were so excited. Given the high fives, we decided through rock, paper, scissors that I would be the one to call NASA to tell them that we needed radar tracking support. And that's when we heard a sound we didn't expect. It was sort of like a didgeridoo. It went whoa, 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 whoa. Now, as we were both certified rocket scientists at this point, we knew exactly what that was. That was the sound of a potato that had failed to reach orbit and was now tumbling end over end, and our doom was near. We did exactly what kids would do. We screamed and ran around looking for a place to hide. Because we didn't want to die. I mean, who wants a tombstone that reads, "Here lies George, mashed by a potato"? Well, Jay found himself a trash can lid and held it over his head in a protective stance, and that potato slammed down and splatted open, steamy and creamy. Now, for those of you who want the scientific explanation for what happened, well, see, that potato gained a positive velocity as it left that can, and it went up to its apogee, and then it came back down, decelerating as the velocity reached zero, and then it picked up a velocity of positive, headed back down into the atmosphere. An easier way to say that is it went up into space and kind of, well, sputtered out and came right back down. Well, we looked at that potato. I stuck my finger in. Oh, it was good. We realized at that point that we had a new business. No longer did mothers have to wait for 3 hours at 350 degrees for a baked potato. We could do launch and serve, and they would be ready in seconds. As we contemplated the size of our empire and how we would give our mothers free delivery, Jay held up a tennis racket. "Do you think we could make French fries with this thing?" "I don't know. Let's give it a try." So we packed a potato in, pointed it in the air, and Jay held that tennis racket over the end, and boom, that potato went out of that can and hit that tennis racket, cut into perfect shoestring fries, and went right up into that rain cloud. But the most amazing thing is they didn't come back out. Now, we were scratching our heads, but we were also students of the water cycle. We'd had elementary science. We knew that this was a matter of precipitation. The cloud just wasn't heavy enough to release the water or the French fries. We tried the rest of the 8 pounds of potatoes to get them to come back down, but they wouldn't. Now, there was lightning and thunder starting up, so our moms told us we had to come home, and we did, "Oh, Mom," but they weren't going to listen, and we went home. Later that night on the news, we heard that up in Idaho, it was raining French fries. Now, Jay and I changed the agricultural destiny of Idaho that day. I'd like to say you could call us Johnny Appleseed, but we're going to have to settle for Mr. Potato Head.
I'm Suzanne Hudson, and I love telling stories. I love listening to stories, too, but I really do believe that we all have a story to tell, and sometimes just something as simple as a family gathering becomes a story. And here is my story. Now, my family's Thanksgiving tradition is to gather at my home on the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving to a big sit-down dinner. My husband and I rearrange the furniture, placing the tables in one long arrangement of tables seating between 20 and 25 people. And then we love to go around the table and tell what we're thankful for. Someone always mentions Jody's raspberry pie. Now, Jody is my charming and feisty daughter-in-law, and she does make a fabulous raspberry pie. In fact, she comes from a long line of Southern cooks. And from the first time she brought her raspberry pie to our Thanksgiving Eve dinner several years ago, it became a holiday favorite. Everyone raved over it. My husband liked it so much that he mentioned to me that he would like some of that pie for his birthday. So I called Jody and I asked for the recipe. She said she'd give it to me, but then she never did. Instead, showing up at the door with a pie in hand on my husband's birthday. He was pretty happy about that. Now, when my birthday came around, she did the same thing for me, and she even made it with less sugar because she knew I was watching my sugar intake. It was every bit as good to me. Of course, it doesn't do much good to watch your sugar if you're going to eat the whole pie. Well, I casually asked again for the recipe, but it never came. And then one time I decided, I just have to have this recipe. I'm hosting book club. and I want to serve that raspberry pie. She said she would give it to me, but she just never did. Actually kind of disappearing, no emails, no phone calls. And I began to think she must be hiding from me. I just had to get that recipe. So one day, I dropped in unexpectedly with a plate of brownies in hand and just said I wanted to visit. Well, there I was, and there she was. And I told her, you know, I brought a recipe card, a blank recipe card, and I'd love just to write down that recipe for the raspberry pie. She was cornered, and she knew it. And I walked out of the house with that recipe in hand. I served it to my book club, and they loved it. And I told everyone, it's an old family recipe. And I knew that it had won the favorite dessert prize for book club that year. But as much as I felt I had won that prize, I really became the loser where it really counted when Thanksgiving rolled around and Jody's raspberry pie was absent. No word of explanation from her, but I knew why. And the next year, no raspberry pie. Oh, I could have made it myself, but that was Jody's recipe. I could never cross that line. And so it went, until it was a couple of years ago. I suppose I had been forgiven, and Jody showed up once again with her raspberry pie. She looked very sheepishly and set the pie down on the table with the desserts. And I think to make up for being absent for a few years with her great raspberry pie, she also brought this wonderful baked sourdough dressing sprinkled with Parmesan cheese. And I will have to say that is the best dressing that I have served at my Thanksgiving table for over 30 years. But now that I know my spunky daughter-in-law so well, you can bet I won't ask for the recipe. But hey, if you want the recipe for the raspberry pie, just give me a call. But shh, don't tell anyone where you got it.
You know, Thanksgiving reminds me of family so much. I grew up in a house that was in front of my Grandma Peterson's house. And not very far away, my Grandpa and Grandma Bullock lived. And it seemed like we were always going to somebody's house and eating. But I'll always remember Thanksgiving because everybody came to our house to eat because our house was bigger than the rest of the family's house. It's difficult as you get older and your children grow up and move away from the house and you don't see aunts and uncles and cousins that much anymore. So I sat down one day a few years ago and I wrote a poem reminiscent of a Thanksgiving get-together when the kids were here at home. When I was young, it wasn't much fun except for riding bikes and staring at cars. When I became older, I looked over my shoulder and thought I'd come real far. I could afford a ride. I had a gal by my side, and life seemed to be trouble-free. And next thing I knew, I was 32 and traded that sports car for 11-pound baby. From that point on, it was all downhill. I'd never enough for myself. I was working hard trying to pay the bills, and there was hardly any food on the shelf. I was doing better at 43 because my kids and I could have fun. Saturday mornings we'd leave the house and off to the hills we'd run. Now my kids are on their own, and they have problems just like I used to. It isn't easy being in charge, paying bills, and working the whole day through. I've got news for them, those kids of mine. No matter how much you put away, it'll never amount to a hill of beans unless you take time to play. My memories of those child-rearing years aren't memories of troubles and such. There are the times we played, of the times we laughed. Oh, how I miss those times so much. Like when we went four-wheeling way up high and we were caught in the pouring rain, The thunder and lightning striking so near scared us half out of our brains. It was then we smelled that sickening smell of a Sasquatch ever so near. Made my kids request, and I did my best to get the heck out of there. Those times we went fishing off the shore of a high Uinta pond or spent in our boat cruising into the far beyond. If I could do it all over again, that opportunity for sure I'd take. So I hope my kids in the future near will visit me for old time's sake. That time spent camping under the stars when all night it rained cats and dogs. I wish that we could do it one more time just to hear those croaking frogs. Or take, for example, when a four-wheel ATV landed smack dab on my son's head. If I hadn't wore my helmet that day, I'm certain he'd now be dead. But because I decided to play it safe and wear my skull protection, if I hadn't, he wouldn't have seen the example I made and wouldn't have made the connection that having fun is a great thing to do, but as he went on out to play, he did exactly what he needed to do, even though his helmet got in the way. He told me later, while his head still hurt and his helmet was cracked in two, "Dad, if you hadn't put your helmet on, I wouldn't have put mine on, too." I love my children for who they are, and now they have kids of their own. I miss their laughter around the house and wish they could come back home. No, not forever, but just enough so we could laugh about those days when they ran off and did those things that caused good times to come their way. It's quieter now, peaceful too, and the place where we live is grand. But there's some things missing, just a few, and I hope that they understand that growing old isn't as fun when the days are spent alone. Well, at least I don't think they're half as grand as when the kids were here at home.
Now that you've been with your family and loved ones, take a moment to write down the stories that were shared, and then tell those stories to others.
Kathy, I'm thinking of fixing myself a toasted, hot turkey open-faced sandwich with gravy and cranberry sauce. Can I fix one for you, too?
Well, all of a sudden, I do have my appetite back. You bet. Everyone has a story. Share yours. Contact us at thestorymine@gmail.com. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.